This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 175 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com. With me on the line via Skype from Melbourne once again, Mr. Shelton Muller. How are you?
I'm really good, mate. Really big show. Really good. I'm just in, I'm just in a weird mood, I suppose. Haven't even had any whiskey yet. I'm good. I'm really good.
Excellent.
And you?
Yeah, really good. Really good.
That's good.
We're buying a new house.
Another one?
Yeah.
You can only live in one at a time. You know that, don't you?
Yes.
You know? Okay. All right.
And we're moving. We're leaving Sydney.
You're not coming to Melbourne by chance, are you?
No, mate. Sorry.
Bummer. Would have been good. We could have hung out, dude.
That would have been good, yeah.
Yeah, I could have come over to your place and we could have done another one of our live sit in the same room kind of podcasts every week.
Oh, man.
Open a bottle of red.
That would just get messy really quickly.
Well, it has the last couple of times. So,
Oh, dear.
The 3-hour marathon with Mr. Annable and Mr. Nathan Muller, that was good. We did another one once up at your place too, if I remember correctly, sitting around that condenser mic.
Did we? I thought you'd only been to my place once. We did the one at Echuca.
No, we also did one, if I remember correctly, at your place.
Oh, right. That was before the 3-hour marathon.
Oh, yeah,
Right. Yes. Gee, that goes and way back.
Oh, yeah. We were much younger men back then.
Yes.
So where are you moving to?
Up to Gosford, which is about an hour north of Sydney.
Okay.
Sea change? Yeah, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Both just sick of the Sydney traffic more than anything else.
Yeah.
And just the rat race. And picked up a nice 4-bedroom house and sort of... you could almost class it as semi-rural because we're right up on the side of a hill beside a reserve. So we've got all this reserve over the top of the mountain right behind us, and a beautiful east-facing side of the hill. So we'll get morning sun all year round.
Beautiful.
And it's about a 7-minute drive to the beach, and it's just going to be beautiful.
So when's the big move?
In about 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. So there will be a bit of an interruption to the podcasting endeavours.
Oh,
for probably 2 or 3 weeks, I would imagine, because obviously I'm going to have to rip down my studio here at home. And then, once we've relocated, there'll be the process of having to work out how I'm going to reassemble it in the new house. So, so there'll be a little bit of an interruption around the beginning of April. But,
Okie doke. All right. Well, we'll all have to prepare for that. Either that or I'll just do some behind your back or something.
Fair enough.
You know, I'll get, Joe McNally or, Joel Marowitz or somebody really cool on the line. And, we don't need Bruce. So, we don't need Bruce. We can do this ourselves. You've done that to me,
Yes,
I've been
all
hell bent down the place, so why can't I do it to you? Does it seem fair to you out there in podcast land that I could do that? Seems fair to me, who does this Williams think he is, indispensable? I don't think so. Anyway, back to you and your move.
Yeah.
I'm really happy for you, mate. I'm really
Thank
happy
you.
For you.
That's, yeah, we're looking forward to it.
I'm good. That's good, mate. I'm really glad.
It's going to mean a longer commute to work.
Yep.
Be about a 90-minute commute in each direction, which is about double the length of my current commute. But
apart from your photography, no job change, or will photography hopefully become the job change?
Eventually, yes.
Yeah.
But for now, I will have to retain my position at ARN.
Yes. How many photographers around in Gosford?
That's a good question. Haven't looked yet.
Yeah. Have a look. You may find yourself, there's two ways of being a photographer. You can be, a little fish in a big pond, a big fish in a little pond. I mean, there's all sorts of ways. There might be, a big pond gets, lots and lots of food, but you have to fight harder to get it. A little pond, well, there's not as much food, but, you're a bigger fish, so the chances of getting what's there are, also good. Excuse me just a sec. Oh, sorry. It's that cheap crystal meth.
Speaking of which,
yes,
because we were talking about TV shows before we started. Have you seen Breaking Bad?
No.
Oh, what a show!
Oh, really?
Oh man, it is awesome.
Oh, okay.
It is awesome.
I've heard about it. I haven't.
Very short synopsis of the plot is: high school chemistry teacher gets diagnosed with lung cancer. Starts to despair for the future of his wife, their 19-year-old cerebral palsy inflicted son, and their soon-to-be-born daughter.
Oh boy.
Has a brother-in-law who's in the DEA, who's, you know, on TV for having busted a crystal meth lab. And so the school teacher decides, I know chemistry. I know it pretty damn well. I'm going to cook crystal meth. And ends up becoming this kingpin crystal meth chef and distributor. It's a great show.
Oh boy.
It's
okay.
Well worth a look, yeah.
Breaking Bad. You know, why doesn't someone... I had a great, great idea for a, you know, for a show like that, along those lines, but about a photographer.
Okay.
You know, why doesn't somebody make a series, a serious, really interesting series about a photographer?
Yeah.
And the scrapes and messes he gets into, the things he has to deal with, you know, the traveling overseas, the, you know, the wars he goes and photographs, the journalistic things he has to handle back home, personal life,
yeah,
you know, the difficulty of actually making a living, following your passion and still making a living,
yeah,
you know, a wife who's afraid of the fact that he has to travel into these zones, you know, her parents who never liked him in the first place, la, 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 you know.
There's so many avenues, aren't there?
Yeah, if I knew how to pitch a TV show, I'd put one together and pitch the thing. You know, it'd be fantastic. Somebody who's listening to this podcast will probably know how to do it. Steal my idea, and you watch. Next year, I'll be watching TV, and there'll be this awesome series about this photographer in New York who travels back and forth parts of the world and gets himself in all sorts of dangerous scrapes, and, you know,
and all you. All you'll get out of it will be a credit. Thanks to Shelton for the idea.
Yeah, it'd be great. Yeah, and a fiver in the mail. You know, here's a wee bit for your contribution. Yeah, it'd be, you know, but it'd be a great show. Mm-hmm. Why doesn't somebody, you know, there's been movies made about photographers, but very few actual good ones.
Right.
There was one with Nick Nolte in, was it Salvador?
Okay.
Oh, that was brilliant. That was a really good film about a photographer. And he's trying to get this, you know, he's photographed a journalist being shot by these revolutionaries.
Right.
Who's played by Gene Hackman.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to, and they see him photograph, and so they're after him. And, he's running through the back streets of this city and wherever it is, Salvador, El Salvador, I think. And they're trying to get a hold of him. And it was just... really great film, but he's very convincing as a photographer. You know how when you see photographers in a scrimmage, you know, in these shows when they've got the paparazzi, they're all holding their cameras wrong.
Yeah.
You ever notice that? They got like a 4-foot lens on the front, and they're still holding the camera on either side
of the body.
Of the body, you know, and they got flash sitting on the top, and this, you know, 400mm lens, and they got stuck, you know, 3 feet away from the guy's face, and you know, man, if you're gonna get extras, at least tell them how to hold a camera and give them a proper camera to hold.
Yeah,
you know. But no, Nick Nolte, he's working with two Nikon F2ASs, and it was made in the late 70s, early 80s, and it's just a really great film. But he's very convincing as a photographer. Just
right.
The way he winds, shoots, set exposure, puts his lenses on, takes them off, like, it obviously he practiced the part very, very well.
Right.
And Clint Eastwood was also very, very convincing, I thought, in Bridges of Madison County as a photographer.
Oh, I never saw that movie.
Oh, it's, you know, a bit of a chick flick and stuff,
yeah.
But he plays the part of a National Geographic photographer who comes to Madison County to photograph the covered bridges.
Yes.
And he falls in love with, what's her name?
Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep's character, yeah. And, yeah, he's very convincing. Again, knows how to hold and, you know, hold a camera, wind the film on, load the film. You know, he'd done his research so that, you know, photographers who were watching would say, yep. You know how to do it. But so many times you see photographers in these movies, and they, you can tell they have absolutely no idea how to hold a camera. Mind you, a lot of photographers don't have any idea how to hold a camera. You know how many times at our workshops we have to say, look, hold your camera properly. Well, I am. No, actually, look, support it with the left under the lens, and that gives your right hand free to change your shutter speed and your aperture. And then the vertical hold, you know, they always put the weight on their taking camera rather than putting the weight on their left hand, you know. And right. The weight on their taking hand, you know,
yep.
The right hand rather than the left, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
It's just, you know, but a very, very, if you want to see movies about photographers, that one with Nick Nolte is just brilliant.
So what's the movie called?
Oh, look, I should be Googling it as we speak.
Oh, but, okay.
let me have a quick Google. I think it's called El Salvador.
Oh, okay.
I'll have a quick Google. Hang on a second.
All right.
Nick Nolte... Salvador. Let me have a look and see. There you are. Nick Nolte. And, oh, come on. El Salvador. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
El Salvador. Yeah. I think that's, I'm just having a very, very quick, Salvador. Just called Salvador.
Right.
But it's, yeah. Top 10 photographers in movies. James Woods also plays a photographer in that film, and he's, you know, James Woods is great. He plays this really wigged out photojournalist in the movie. Very, very good, really, really good film. I really enjoyed it. Then you've got Blow Up, which was ridiculously interesting. Right. Seen it? Blow Up, the classic from the 60s. Oh, it was made in the mid late 60s in the hip part of London, and David Hemmings plays a part of he's a fashion photographer, but he's out walking around one day in the park, and he accidentally photographs a murder taking place. And it's actually, the movie was taken from a very short story, but they turned it into a feature-length film, most of which is just rubbish.
Right.
Most of which has very little to do with the plot. You know, him photographing models and going to, you know, it was ridiculous. But it's one of those classics, you know, of movies about, you know, about photographers. I'm just on a website now called Photo Radar and top 10 photographers in movies.
Right.
George Clooney has just been added to the ranks, apparently. The movie called something, a Nikon shooting assassin. The American, right? Okay, David Hemmings in Blow Up, Dennis Hopper in Apocalypse Now, James Woods in Salvador. I think Nick Nolte was better, Clint Eastwood, and Edward Furlong in Pecker. Sure.
Never heard of that.
Pecker is about the ironies of fine art photography rather than an homage to Todgers. The eponymous Pecker is a Baltimore sandwich shop worker whose photos of his wacky family and friends make him the toast of the New York art scene. Oh, I'm going to have to get that one. James Stewart. Oh, it's listing James Stewart. Of course, he played the photographer in Rear Window.
Okay.
You never seen that?
Rear Window.
He plays a photographer who's got his leg broken.
Oh, yes.
And he looks across and he thinks he's photographed someone murder their wife.
Yes, that's right.
I think he's murdered his wife. Grace Kelly's in it.
That's right.
Yep. She's like half his age or something, but let's believe she can fall in love with him anyway. Oh, Nicole Kidman played Diane Arbus in Fur. Did you ever see that?
No.
What a crazy, whacked out, wigged out. I couldn't hold. I was bored, brainless in it, I have to admit. So I didn't stay and watch it. Diane Arbus, her work never really interested me. She was brilliant, but Faye Dunaway in The Eyes of Laura Mars.
Never saw it.
No, really interesting film. She plays a photographer with a bit of clairvoyance, and they start investigating her because her photographs, her fashion photographs, emulate crime scene photos,
and so
see her fashion photos, and they equate them to crime scene photos, and they think maybe she's done it, but she, from what I remember, she doesn't. But anyway, Timothy Spall in Shooting the Past. Nope, never seen him. Never seen that one. So hey, some great photographers' movies, but why isn't there a really good TV series along the lines of what you were saying? You know, I mean, you've got, there's some really high production TV shows there.
Totally.
The ones you're talking about. Mm. You know, things like Dexter, Sons of Anarchy, Breaking Bad, really high, you know, quality. They could do an awesome one about a photographer every week. Imagine how many photographers could tune in every week. Millions of photographers all over the world.
Absolutely.
You know? They'd have a ready set audience. Absolutely. You know, get it sponsored. Ah, look, they're missing out on a $1 million idea. So, does that matter? Funny, I knew how to, you know, pitch an idea to the movie studios.
Oh, well.
Yeah. So, who's out there who wants to be with me? Come on, who's with me? If you know how to pitch the idea, who's with me? Let's make millions. Who would we get to play our photographer?
Oh, I don't know.
Ooh. The inimitable Bruce Williams?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. All right. Interesting. Well, you know, somebody will come along.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, if you want to know more about my great idea, I've sussed it all out. We can talk. We'll talk and we'll pitch it. Look, this has been interesting because for so long we've gone without emails. I mean, have you noticed a drought of emails?
Oh, certainly over Christmas there was. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But I put it down to the fact that we weren't recording, so.
I don't know, just generally, I reckon we've had a bit of a, you know, slack off in emails.
Lull.
Yeah, we used to get all sorts of funny emails. We sort of don't get them anymore. I don't know why. But we've had some lovely stuff about the subject of composition, which is interesting because it does seem to be one of those subjects that people are interested in, as if it is more of an issue than it should be. To me, that's the way I'm thinking.
Okay.
But if there's one thing I've noticed at the workshops that I run is that composition is an issue. And I've said this many times, but, you know, it just seems like what I thought would be relatively innate is actually a lot more difficult for people than I thought. And I've last podcast we talked about fear being one of those things. And that's, you know, been agreed upon by a couple of, you know, our listeners. And maybe we should go through a couple of these emails and talk about them, seeing as sure. You know, they're nice enough to email. What do you reckon?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, let's have a listen to Rob Van Elven, and his older brother, Rob Van 12. Okay. sorry, Rob. I was there. I'd take it. You know. All right. Good. He's not a 10. He can turn it up to 11. All right. Shelton and Bruce. He said, first off, great to see a new podcast again. I discovered Shutters Inc. podcast back in December 2010 and had started downloading all the archived issues from iTunes. I think he meant December 29, didn't he? Because, of course, he's emailed us before December 2010. No, he hasn't. I'm thinking of somebody else. Sorry, Rob. I'm getting you confused with another awesome person. Okay. For the last couple of weeks, I've been a social hermit, walking around with my earplugs in, trying to catch up to the present. Every now and then I checked for a new episode in iTunes, but all of January it seemed very quiet. Yes, it was, Rob. Sorry about that. I started to wonder if with my podcast time traveling, I'd witnessed birth and death of a star podcast. So like I said, great to see that the star podcast is still very much alive and giggling. As for the topic composition, one of the things that made a lot of sense to me is the term visual weight. Now, I like this term, Bruce. Light or very dark objects draw the eye in. People in a photo often have more visual weight than other elements. By putting elements with the same visual weight in some sort of balance, you can create a pleasing composition. Cheers, Rob Van Elven, Sydney. And you're absolutely right. Visual weight is exactly what it's all about. I think it's not about pulling, if there are going to be elements with the same visual weight, yes, they have to have some sort of balance. It's that balance that we have to talk about. Because it's balance, composition, you know, often the same thing. Where you have visual weight that is greater than other elements, you have to decide how many of those other elements are going to remain in the frame. This, to me, seems to be quite the issue. So many people try to tell too much of a story in their photographs. And at our workshops, I equate it to someone who doesn't get to the point. You know, when you're talking to someone, mate, and they take forever to make the point. You know, they're trying to tell you in the nicest possible way that your feet stink. And, you know, they're going on and on about, you know, runners that are made of rubber. And, you know, how there are all sorts of ways that, you know, and socks, of course, socks have a lot to do with how your feet stink at the end. Why don't you just tell me, right? My feet stink. All right, I'll go and take my socks off, wash my feet, and I'll come back into the room. Photography's like that. You know, photography, what is the photo saying? You know, it's saying your feet stink. Well, you know, good, now I know. But if it's trying to tell me in this roundabout way, I have no idea what you're talking about. You know, a lot of us like people who get to the point. Just say it as it is. And it's the same with photography. Your composition is a lot about what to leave in and what to leave out. And that's where a lot, that's where the fear comes in, because people are afraid to exclude elements within the frame, thinking they have to be there to tell the story. That is sort of like the person who takes a heck of a long time to get to the point, you know, or people who tell stories but include far too many details, and it goes on and on and on. You know, the Monty Python sketch, and I was just listening to it.
Which one?
He goes in to arrange a holiday, and his name is Smoke Too Much. You ever heard that one?
I'm familiar with it, but not intimately.
Okay. Well, he goes in, he says, you know, I'd like to arrange a holiday, please. And he says, the travel agent says, hello, I'm Bounder of Adventure. And he says, hello, I'm Smoke Too Much. And the other fellow says, well, you better cut down a little then. And he go on. But in the sketch, it's Eric Idle at his best. He actually goes, towards the end, he's just going on and on and on and on about how much he hates package tours.
Right.
And it's like that with photography. You know, instead of just saying, I hate package tours, he's droning on and on, drives the other fellow completely crazy. And if we're doing that with our photographs, if we're trying to say too much, or we are, you know, we think that we have to put so many visual weights into our image, we're actually just going to end up with something so badly imbalanced, so full of stuff, that it can't be carried, that it doesn't make one point, it makes 1,000 points, and no one's going to listen. No one's going to look. It just makes no point at all. So you have to ask yourself, what is the point that I'm going to be making in this photograph? Is it something simple as, this is John Smith, you know, and there it is. This is Jane Jones. That's the photo. Or is the photo saying, this is John Smith in front of his grandfather's house? Then that's the story. But you don't have to have much more than that, you know? Great photographs often are very simple in the arrangement or the balance of the things that consume the weight. And the more weighty you, the weightier the objects in terms of their compositional strength, I think personally the fewer of them you should have, you know? If something's got lots of visual weight, like a portrait, then make it a portrait. And if there are other elements within the frame, don't have them in focus or have them composed in, you know, in a way that they don't, you know, conflict. They don't appear to have the same visual weight as the subject. Think of the word subject. It's what the story's all about. Mm-hmm. And if we're trying to, you know, add other chapters or add other paragraphs to this photograph, it isn't going to work. I find that most people, especially at our workshops, they are too scared to get close and too scared to exclude things. Right. And so as a result, their photographs are weakened by their lack of dynamic composition, their lack of courage in excluding that which is not necessary. So what I usually will tell them at workshops is, look, you keep getting closer and closer and excluding until you get to the point where you go, oh, no, I need that. I have to have that. Then you just take a half step back, and that's your composition, pretty much. But, you know, or that really, to me, is how to remove or exclude, in, you know, apart from zooming in or whatever, elements from the frame. Get to the point where you say, oh, no, this is ridiculous. Okay, now I'm not saying anything at all.
I just need to butt in very quickly.
Yeah.
And say that while you're touching on this about minimalism within composition, I need to admit to a mistake last week, which Richard Annable pointed out, and that was that I cited George Martin as the engineer for the Beatles. He was not. He was the producer. Was it Jeff Emerick did all the engineering? And I should have known that, and my apologies.
Now, why should you have known that? Really?
Because I'm the audio engineer.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. All right. Look, I love you, Rich, but get a life and leave. Honestly. Serious.
But thank you for pointing it out, Rich.
Oh, okay. He's humbler than me, clearly. You know? All right. No, fair enough.
Anyway, as you were.
No, and I don't know what I was talking about now.
Minimalism.
Minimalism. Yeah. Well, it's look, a photograph can contain a lot of elements, and some of the greatest photographs ever taken in the world do. But for some reason, they work because they are telling one story. So, you know, clearly there is something within that story that carries a lot of weight, a lot of visual weight. And the arrangement, you know, Rob says to put them in some sort of balance. Well, that balance, there are guidelines for that balance, you know, Fibonacci rules of composition, and, you know, things like leading lines, repeating patterns, you know, dynamic points of composition in the frame, etc. But have analyze the level of visual weight your subject has and say, well, how much weight does it carry? Will it carry this photograph on its own? And, you know, usually the answer is yes. If you've found that you've been captivated by something, then it has some visual weight. And often it will by itself carry a photograph. If it requires a story to be told around it to explain it, tell as little of that story as possible so that people aren't wondering what the heck this photograph is all about. You know, that I love the way you've put this, Rob. It's an excellent expression, visual weight, and I think that something I'd like to probably, if you don't mind, use every now and again as an expression. I think that where'd you get it from, Rob? Someone, you said one of the things that made a lot of sense to me is the term visual weight. I don't think I coined that phrase. So where'd you get it from? I didn't coin that phrase, did I, Bruce?
Not that I recall.
Doesn't ring a bell with me.
But yeah. Anyway, who knows?
like Quasimodo's face, it doesn't ring a bell. You heard that joke? Anyway, okay. All right. So there's that. Thank you, Rob, for that. Very much appreciate that. Then we had Steve Peters. Thank you very much, Steve, for your email. He says, great podcast. Yeah, he likes to butter us up in the opening words. After listening to episode 174 and Shelton's rant about composition, I didn't know it was a rant, but perhaps it came across that way. Thank you. I thought I would share with you several thoughts. All right. One being, I recently read, and I wish I knew where, but this persona was saying that when you first get your DSLR, just get out and shoot. Don't worry about what your camera can do. Shoot in auto mainly so you can get your composition. Just go out and take photographs. Then, after 3 months or so, when you've literally shot every day, then go and learn about the technical aspects of your camera and the wonderful world of using manual. This person, who I think was a woman, actually found that those who got a camera and went out shooting then learned the finer points of their camera, they were actually better in framing shots than those that wanted to get the technical stuff down pat. She felt this inhibited their creativity, as they were too worried about looking through their viewfinder and reading the camera details instead of looking how they were framing the shot. Made sense to me, but there are people who seem to have a fantastic eye from day one. Others, like me, have to learn to better frame or compose an image. Having said that, my second point is following Shelton and Glynn's advice, I took photos of my nephew's formal. I proudly put the images up on my website and said to my sister, what do you think? She said, yeah, all right, but you cut the top of their heads off. I rolled my eyes. Yeah, but that's what I've been taught. Obviously, the viewing public do not know about composition. Your comments, boys? Some good stuff there, Steve. Mm-hmm. Some really good stuff. First of all, I would agree on this particular photographer to some degree that you should just get out and shoot and learn composition first. At our workshops, we teach a lot about exposure, working with your camera in manual, etc. Because, well, we sort of have to. Because where a lot of people get their photography wrong is the technical part. They come with an innate vision. Some are brilliant shooters, but their camera is not a mind reader. Cameras are essentially stupid bits of equipment. You're the intelligent one. And if you don't know how to manipulate light, manipulate your camera to control that light, then it doesn't matter how great your composition is. If you have to fix everything in Photoshop or you just can't, then, you know, there's something seriously missing in your photograph. The reverse sort of happens at our workshops when, you know, we'll put a subject in some available light. We'll teach the person how to meter for that, maybe spot meter or, you know, incident meter or whatever the situation might be. And the person will get the technicals just right. But because they are so busy thinking about the technicals, they come and show us and their composition is very weak. However, what I have learned is though their composition would probably be weak anyway, because we'll often in many cases, we'll go back and say, look, now that you've got the shutter speed and aperture correct, I mean, look at that. Your exposure is spot on. That JPEG is spectacular. Now go back, shoot it again, and just, you know, get in a little closer, move to your third, remove the looking room, whatever we might advise. And they go back, they take the photograph, they come back, and then now what do you think? The photograph is almost always exactly the same as the one they just took. And we'll toggle between them and say, well, look, there's really not much difference. But I thought I got closer. Well, actually, look, you didn't. And there's a block. You are afraid. There's this block between you and taking that next step. Go back and do it again. All right. So they go back, do it again. And again, not much different. We had a fellow come to our workshops when we were up in Brisbane. Lovely fellow. A pom. But a lovely fellow anyway. And
only kid.
Lovely fellow. Actually, you have to be very nice to him because he was ex-SAS, British SAS.
Wow.
And he was the nicest bloke. But he came to 5 days of workshops, and almost every portrait he did was centrally composed. And we talked to him about it, and we talked to him about it, and we talked to him about it, until I pulled him aside and I asked him the question. I said, have you ever had any sniper training? He said, oh, yeah, absolutely. I trained as a sniper when I were a lad, right? And I said, so you're used to putting people's heads right smack bang in the middle, aren't you? And unfortunately, yes, it was true. He'd had his share of putting people's heads right smack bang in the middle. And it took him so much to get out of that. We have this thing about putting people's heads in the middle. A lot of photographers do. And even when some try to get beyond that, still afraid. And that's why Steve is talking about in the second part of his email about cutting people's heads off. This issue also arose in our workshop, our portrait workshop over the weekend, because we were teaching people to do that. Not to decapitate them completely, but just to get in very tight on the face so that the top half of the forehead was removed, so that the eyes are in that horizontal third and, you know, the image just beautifully composes a leading line from the shoulder up from the corner of the image to the eyes up in that dynamic third position, and yeah, cut the top of the head off. Anybody who goes through my website will see I do a lot of portraits that way simply because it's about the face. If the, you know, you include the top of the head, often you are, you know, you are pulling back, the eyes go to the middle, sometimes it just doesn't work. And the other reason that we teach people that is because they're afraid to do it. They have this thing about, I have to include the entire head in the frame. And we're not teaching that you should do it, that you have to do it, that it's the only way to do it. What we're trying to get people to do is to be brave enough to do it, to take that step forward. One of the ladies came up to me during the workshop and she said, you know, I recently did this. I was photographing some children and I got in very close and very tight and did a very dynamic portrait of the child, but I cropped from halfway from the forehead down, and the parents didn't like that. They didn't like the fact that I'd cut the top of the heads off. And so what do you do? And I said, well, beauty is in the eye of the checkbook holder. You know, they're paying you. You do the shots as they like. But, you know, they're thinking in a sort of very conservative, non-creative fashion. They just want to see a beautiful photograph of all of their child, not just, you know, the dynamic portrait of their gorgeous or cute little face. That's fine. The parents are paying. They should get what they pay for. But when you are shooting for yourself, or when you're teaching yourself to compose, you know, take that step forward and be braver than you thought you were. So many times, and I couldn't tell you, it happens every time we run this particular workshop, there'll be a few people who will, you know, take five or six goes. And sometimes we actually have to, you know, we have to grab their camera and say, look, shoot it like this, bang, show them the image. And it, the block, Bruce, between them getting from their conservative composition through to that more dynamic composition is quite incredible. It's surprising to me how blocked people are in taking that real tight compositional approach and making their photographs more dynamic because they think they're cutting off the top of the head. But I ask you, is the top of the head important? Sometimes it is. In my case, it isn't because there's not a lot going on, right? I'd rather be photographed from my halfway through my forehead down because A, I have an incredibly good-looking face. B, there's not a lot going on the top of my head, you know? So what's to see? So if you're having a block, try that. Try getting so close that you are uncomfortable. Not proximity-wise. I'm not talking about close to the subject, but close in terms of how much you fill the frame to the point where you're uncomfortable. And you'll find that suddenly your photographs are going to take this entirely new dynamic, you know, characteristic to them that you'll be surprised and you'll want to do it a lot more. It took me some time to do it, but now it's almost my standard port of call. It's been to me quite a learning curve to teach people, you know, to not be afraid of that and actually get in very, very close. So I suppose, you know, we've talked about this before, but it just seems to be something that photographers are very, very afraid of generally, is exclusion, you know, to almost a ridiculous degree. But then when you've done that, you're making a very, very powerful statement. You know, it's like graffiti. You know, sometimes three words on a wall is far, far more powerful than, you know, an entire wall full of something people won't read, you know, a paragraph.
Yeah.
I think one of the most poignant bits of graffiti I ever read was two words. Procrastinate. Now. Was rather interesting. Anything to add to that, Bruce? What are your thoughts? How do you go on?
Thinking back to Steve's first point, I must admit I was in two minds. I kind of agreed, but I also didn't agree.
Yeah.
In that I can totally understand where the person who wrote that comment that Steve read, I can understand where they were coming from about just, you know, get your camera out of the box, don't worry about the technicalities, just get out there and shoot, and you will develop a sense of composition just maybe through continually shooting. But at the same time, I was also a little bit skeptical that you could potentially, by going out and taking that approach and not learning the technical side of your camera, develop some really bad habits, which could then take a long time to break.
Yep, I agree. Absolutely, wholeheartedly agree. And I'm glad you came back to that point because I missed it in going on to the second.
Right.
I think personally, and we teach this at our workshops, and I'd love to get some feedback on it, but to me, because our brain is divided into two, you've got the creative side and the technical side, and we'll talk about this in a second because we're going to refer to Michael's email in a second. Mm-hmm. If you've got the technical down pat, you've taken a shot, seen it, histogram's good, or the JPEG is great on the back of your camera, you've spot metered, you've done whatever you've needed to create this image.
From a technical standpoint. From a
technical perspective, then that part's done. If you've got the light's not going to change that quickly, it's done. You can forget about it. You know, people think it's so hard to shoot on manual. It's actually easier shooting in manual to me than shooting in auto.
Certainly in this digital age, yes.
Yeah, because once it's done, right? And now, okay, I don't need to worry about my shutter speed and my aperture. I can just breathe through this shot and I can just look at the composition. I absolutely, unequivocally agree with you on that. I think you could get into some very, very bad habits just going out and bang, 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 bang. I would personally prefer to get the technicals right and then the creatives. Because, I mean, it's like learning to play guitar. I never actually took any formal lessons, and I wish I had have, because I got into some very bad habits. And I've been playing guitar far too long to be this bad. As I've often said, if I had sat down with someone initially who took me through scales, scale shapes, chord shapes, inverted chords, just the simple art of, you know, how to hold a guitar, you know, how to wrap my hand around the neck, rather, you know, because I'm sure I've got my fingering all wrong. If I had gotten that down pat first, then I'm sure that all my creative, all the music that's in my head, I could probably play. But I've got all this stuff going on in my head that I can't play because I haven't got my technicals right. I am inhibited by this lack of flow. I can't move about the neck as I would like. I think photography is very, very much the same. If I've got that shot in the bag, technically, I can forget it. And I can just simply move on to the creative. I see the argument, but I'm not sure that I'm absolutely convinced. You're not convinced either.
I'm not convinced. But at the same time, I would also say, and this is, I'm not backflipping on what I said a minute ago, but I would also say that every person is different.
Yes.
And some people may definitely benefit from the go out, shoot, and then learn the technical aspect later approach. And other people might do better to learn the technical stuff first and then worry about the composition later. I don't think there's a blanket rule for all shooters.
No, there isn't. And I think a balance needs to be found. I think you should have a lot of fun, but I think if you're just out shooting bang, 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 you are actually, if you're in auto mode, I think you tend to be more careless, and you may not actually consider your composition as carefully as you would if you had taken the time to get the technicals right. Maybe that's just my brain. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's just the way I work, but I think if you've gone to all the extent of making sure the shot is technically sound, you may then be a little bit more concerned about its creative. I don't know. I'm not sure. Love to get some feedback on that. But like you say, probably people think differently. There'd be those who would prioritize things in a different way.
I think the comment you just made about if you've got the technical side of it right, you can then, you know, then explore the creative possibilities.
Mm.
Again, it comes down to the type of person, because there are some people who would go, okay, I've got the technical side of it right. I've got that shot. I can now move on.
Yeah.
Which is really the time when they should just be going, no, let's just stay with these settings and explore the creative. So
yep.
Why I say, you know, every person is different.
So whatever, yeah. I think there's a balance. I think with everyone, though, there's a balance to be found there.
Sure.
That balance will vary in terms of its degrees from person to person. But I do agree in the email that there's a balance there. You should go out and shoot a lot and maybe just enjoy the art of composition, just the craft itself of composition. But don't get into bad habits, you know, that you like because they're easy too much, because the other aspect needs to be done. You know, you can't be a great artist unless you really mastered the sciences that are associated with that art. You really can't. I mean, you can have all the music in your head, but unless you've mastered the science of it, you can't actually fulfill it. That's an irrefutable fact. A friend of mine had music in his head that was just awesome, but he could pick up any instrument, you know, a saxophone, a piano, a guitar, and he could pick it up and he could start fooling around, but he'd have, because he didn't know how to then take that saxophone and play it, he didn't know how to take the keyboard and, you know, take it further. He could get stuff out of it, but limited. But you could tell there was stuff going on in his head that was quite amazing, but he just lacked the tenacity to learn what the black and white keys were all about, and you know, and that's fair enough. That was the way he worked, but that's just look, to be honest with you, no disrespect to my friend, that's laziness. If you really are, you know, desirous, passionate for your art, then the passion is innate. That comes from you as a person. It comes from when you were born. It's in you. You know, it's been passed on from generation to generation and finds itself in you. And you're going to manifest it somehow. But you have to learn. You have to learn it. Some people, the composition is innate, and they're just terrible at the technical. Other, the technical, awesome, but their composition is rubbish. It all depends on the degrees, I suppose, are where you find yourself, you know, having the most trouble. I must admit, the one thing that does surprise me in running the workshops that we do run is people's lack of a real dynamic sense of composition. So I think we should discuss this a lot more over the next few podcasts. But perhaps we can have a read finally of Michael's email.
Mm-hmm.
And And he says, hey, great to hear you two are back on the air. I didn't know we'd left for that long, Michael, but, you know, we are. We're back. First of all, I really look forward to the series of composition, and I fully agree with Shelton's talks about fear. I'm the guy who introduced you to the concept of hard and soft techniques. Did you? So lovely segue from what we were just talking about. And I'm thrilled that you liked it so much. Can't take full credit for it, though, since it's basically a translation of a pretty common engineering term in Swedish. You know, fair enough, but I love the whole idea. I took your advice back then about how to advance in the soft techniques. And I've been taking a lot of photographs, trying my way out, looking at even more photos. And now my friends start asking me for private lessons in photography. Hey, go Michael. Awesome, dude. And I do recognize a lot of what Shelton was talking about. They think they are close and fill the frame. And I tell my friends to get even closer and then closer still. And then to cut off the top of the head. Oh, well, there you go. We got another convert for that idea. But you know, it's funny that people talk about that. But you know, there's really not from the forehead to the top of the head. There's really not a heck of a lot going on, really. You know, if you want to make the eyes really are the window to the soul, and the further you get back from them, the less dynamic they are in the frame. So it's not a rule, but it's just something that you should be, I don't know, brave enough to try. Anyway, we'll get back to his email. It says, or, as with nature photography, really change the perspective by, for example, laying flat down on the ground. Sure, one looks ridiculous lying on the ground, but the photos are worth it. So he said, a happy cheer from me. Keep up the good fun. And as said before, really looking forward to the composition series.
So hang on, yeah. was his lying on the ground comment, was this about portraiture or landscape photography?
Nature photography, he's saying.
Oh, right, yeah, okay.
But you know, it applies to that look of that perspective applies to everything. And again, one of the things we teach in our portrait workshop is to just not take every picture from, you know, you're
standing height.
Yeah. I'm on a chair, you know, crawl on the ground. And we set up photographs to make people do that. You know, they go home with dirty clothes at the end of the workshop, but that's, hey, they can be washed. But, you know, if we compose our photographs from our normal standing height every time, boring, you know, look up, look down, get on the ground, change your viewpoint and perspective. And, you know, you will also add a new dynamic to your images. But it's this hard and soft thing that Michael was talking about that we introduced quite a few podcasts ago from his email is actually an excellent description. You know, the hard is the technical and the soft is the creative.
Yep.
You need to analyze where you suffer the most. Some people get the technical straight off. The technical was never an issue with me. I understood it pretty good. And then my natural, you know, sense of creativity, my own Shelton view came into, you know, into its own over a period of years. It takes a long time to get in touch with your own soft, you know, your own creativity.
Sure.
To make the image in your head become the image that you see. But the mathematics of the, you know, f-stops and shutter speeds and the yin and yang of 125th at f8 is the same as 60th at f11. You know, that kind of thing is no problem for me. But, you know, getting in touch with the images in your head, that's the hard part for most. And I think that's where we really battle. We have this misty little concept sitting about in the back of our brain. The real thing now is to drag it forward through that mushy brain and through all the mechanics of camera optics and shutters and stuff and make it actually happen. That's, you know, and it's because it's soft, it gets a little bit lost along the way. The hard stays. F8 at 125th is exactly the same at 250th at 5.6. That stuff is unchangeable. But the soft, that just gets a little bit mushed as it travels from the little place in the back of our brain forward to our eyes and onto the backs of our cameras. That's where sometimes it can take a little bit of a time to get in touch. That's why I suppose we're talking about composition, because somewhere in that process, people lose a lot of that image that they see in the back of their head. It gets lost as it's dragged through the cerebrum and down into the camera. You know, so we'll keep talking about this.
Okay.
You know, but there for the moment, let's, you know, I think we should just, we should, I mean, it has been more about fear, but this particular one, but in terms of exclusion, you know, I really want to make that point that exclusion is actually a very courageous craft. in our imagery. What to leave in and what to leave out is what life is all about. You know, we make decisions every day, and, you know, based upon what do I leave in, what do I leave out, what do I do today that I have to do today that can't be done tomorrow, what can I leave out today that I can do tomorrow, what do I pay for with this week's wage that I have to pay for that I can leave out, you know, what can I leave out and pay for next week. Life is full of those decisions, and they are difficult. In our creative approach, it can be difficult also, but not as much as hinging on it. I mean, hell, it's only a photograph, you know? It's only a photograph, and we're going to take tens of thousands of photographs in our life. But the ones that really count, you know, the ones that are of people we love, places we've been, memories we're creating, we should compose them. We should take that minute out to breathe, and we should just swallow hard, get rid of all the rubbish that doesn't need to be in the photograph, ask ourselves a very serious question. What do I want this photo to say? Do I want a lot of sentences around that one statement, or do I just want one simple statement? And simplify and exclude, and you're on the road to more dynamic composition. Perhaps next week we can talk about actual compositional techniques, but there's no point talking about them until we've really, I think, hammered this point, Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, I think we will want a week for everyone to think about it, and maybe even take a few photographs where they've, you know, taken that step, two steps, three steps forward, and just gotten rid of everything, removed, you know, the emotional zooming problem that we have, and just actually filled the frame with only that which they are interested in capturing. And then you'll be on the road to something really dynamic.
Fair enough.
All right.
We did lay down that challenge last week.
And didn't get nothing. Didn't get nothing.
Well, so, hopefully, even if we didn't hear about it, hopefully some of them actually went out and did it.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. But I'm wondering whether, you know, through the lack of emails we've had on this, we've had these wonderful three, but whether people are having a hard time with this. Because I know how much of a hard time people have when we're right there next to them, standing right next to them. There's the model. There's the light. They're standing right next to us. And we're saying, no, get closer. No, closer. Come on, you can do it. Point the camera down a little bit more. Get, you know, they battle. There is this, you wouldn't believe, Bruce, just the block in people in, you know, I don't know what it is, but there's a serious block in many people to get rid of things that they think should be there, but actually are quite meaningless.
Yeah.
You know? You need to play three notes.
I guess I guess it comes down to, you know, how many of us grew up in families where, you know, the people we looked up to when we were kids were not professional photographers, and they were probably the ones who taught us to take photos, and, you know, the whole thing was, you know, make sure these people are in the shot and you can see the, you know, insert famous landmark here in the background. And, you know, make sure the head is in the middle of the shot and you can see everything from the waist up in the bottom half of the shot and you can see the landmark in the top half of the shot.
Yeah.
You know?
You're describing the classic travel snap there.
Oh,
dude.
Totally. Totally. But you know, I mean, how many of us were brought up like that? And so that's probably where we inherit these bad ideas from, is because we weren't raised by professional photographers, and so we, you know, we have a lifetime's worth of bad compositional habits to try and break out of.
Break, yes. Yes, and maybe that's the block. Maybe that is the block, you know, a way of seeing family snaps all their lives and saying, well, that's how a photo should be, even if it's not as well composed, you know, or maybe, you know, my mum's snapshot isn't that great, but at least it includes all of the person. And we get used to seeing thousands of these over our life, and we're blocked into changing.
Yeah.
You know, we're blocked against changing that. Could be. Valid point. I'm going to investigate that further. You make a valid point there, Bruce, I reckon. That could be exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So, all right. That's all I'm gonna say tonight, I think, because there's no point us moving on to, you know, Fibonacci or anything Aristotle might have said, or about composition or anything, you know, highfalutin like that, until people have got the point that generally when it comes to composition, I find most photographers are afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the people I've ever taught in a workshop are afraid to dynamically compose and to, you know, to exclude. So let's leave it at that, I reckon. See what kind of feedback we get on this little hammering that we're giving, and then move on to some of the finer points of composition. I want to talk next week about taking a breath. So can you remind me on that,
okay,
Bruce?
Yeah, no worries.
All right. I'll, you know, because you've got a better memory for stuff than I do, being younger, etc. Brain's not as close to dementia as mine is.
Okay. Excellent. Well, thank you for that.
No worries. Thank you. Thank you. And please keep in touch with us out there in podcast land.
Yep.
We've loved reading these emails. Thank you guys, for sending us those. Rob, Michael, and Steve. We do have some female listeners too. So, you know, we'd love to hear from you as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ladies. We'd love to hear from the ladies who are listening to the podcast. So, you know, please include yourselves in an email and let us know what your thoughts are. Because to be quite honest with you, it's usually the ladies who are the most afraid. Ha, ha, ha!
Right.
Let's see if that raises some eyebrows.
And remember, the email address is theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.
That's us.
That's us. If you send it to that address, we'll both get it. So
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, mate. Well, we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, look forward to it. That'll be great. And in the meantime, we'll be hearing, so much from people we love who are, you know, going to hear this podcast. We want to get lots of emails on this subject. See what people say. I'd love to get to the bottom of this blockage. All right. That's all I'm going to say. I'm shutting up now.
All right, mate. Talk to you next week.
You bet. See you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Shutters Inc. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.